Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Off the Wall podcast here on Blog Talk Radio. We are live. For the next half hour, if we go overboard, you could listen to the rest of it on yesnetwork.com. And as Brian and I found out last time, as my buddy Brian Sanborn, at Sambone73 from Twitter, joins me once again, part of the Bills Mafia. That would be Buffalo Bills.
How you doing, Chris?
All you football fans out there. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
We've got a lot to discuss. Brian, it's good morning to you. It's good afternoon to me. Brian, of course, is on the left coast out in California, and I am all the way across the country. Actually, if you think about it right now, Brian, you and I are the cannonball run two. You are
nice.
In California, and I am in Connecticut.
I love it. I love
it. So we work in the movie line right off the top. I love it. Let's start with the Knicks, shall we? As people know from our last time we did this podcast together, we grew up together in beautiful and scenic South River, New Jersey, and we grew up rooting for the Knicks in the late 90s, and I told a little anecdote about you spitting on Reggie Miller's face on your TV in your mother's apartment. Now, the Knicks are down 3-1 to the Pacers. They're 0-5 in franchise history when they're down 3-1. I think that's nonsense. I talked to Al Iannazzone of Newsday yesterday. He's the Knicks beat writer for Newsday. We both agreed that was nonsense, and we both agreed that going big didn't work. Mike Woodson's going to go small again tonight. But, Brian, I think it's really – and you could tell me if I'm wrong, but I think it's really as cut and dry. This series could turn around on a dime if the Knicks just start hitting their shots. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. I think people really analyze this way too much about, what's going on with J.R. Smith or what's going on with Carmelo Anthony or what have you. I mean, there are many reasons why the Knicks are down 3-1. But let's just analyze real quick about what you said, making shots. The Knicks are a perimeter-based team. We've known this for a long time. Sometimes you have dry spells. Sometimes you're hot. Now, I really think this series, this is where they really miss what I think Glenn Grunwald was thinking when they got guys like Rasheed Wallace and Marcus Camby, where they can have guys down low and they can bang with teams like the Pacers, at least hold their own. I looked at the regular season between the Knicks and the Pacers. The Knicks only lost a rebounding margin by 5 rebounds. That's not that bad. All right? And they're getting embarrassed on the boards right now. Why? Like you said, because they're missing all their shots. If they start making their shots, guess what happens to the defense? Where now Indiana's collapsing low with David West and Roy Hibbert. They're putting all their guys in the box. Why? Because the Knicks aren't making shots. So why should they respect their outside shot? Once they start making it and the defense has to come out a little bit, guess what's going to start happening? The Knicks are going to get some of those rebounds, even if they miss.
Right.
And maybe just close
they're
that gap just
enough. They're
going
to get those tap out. But now Al and I talked about that. The tap out, which worked all season long with Tyson Chandler and Kenyon Martin, when he joined the team as well, hasn't really been working against the Pacers because the Pacers have been collapsing in the paint, as you said. And when the tap out is tried, the Pacers have some bigs, and the tap outs go actually right to the Pacers, and the Knicks don't get those second, third opportunities that they were getting in the regular season. And, Brian, I totally agree with you. If the Knicks start draining some of these outside shots, the Pacers are going to have to respect that, and they're going to have to start going out towards the perimeter, and then those back taps will start to work a little bit. Now, another thing that people really don't realize, you don't really look at, the Pacers are a very streaky offensive team too. They came in to the postseason, Brian, scoring 94.7 points per game. That was 23 out of the 30 NBA teams, 23rd in the regular season. In the first round against the Hawks, Esteban, they scored 94.5 points per game, and they also just put up 69 in game 3. This is not, the Showtime Lakers. This is the Indiana Pacers. The Knicks may be down 3-1, and it may look bleak, but all they need to do is get the offense going, and, Brian, I don't think they're going out like this in game 5 at Madison Square Garden. I just don't.
You would think so. Let's be fair too. Okay, these great Indiana Pacers that everybody's propping up. They shot 36% in both those games, 37%. I mean, come
exactly.
on.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
As sad as it was for the Knicks, there were opportunities. Even early fourth quarter, you're like, boy, if the Knicks could just make a couple threes, get this down to five or four.
You know, Al brought up a good point yesterday, Brian. Get your thoughts on it here. He said, you know, these games could have went in Indiana's favor by 25 or more points if they hit their shots. Think about the turnovers. You know, the Knicks didn't really turn the ball over. The Pacers did. The Pacers are kind of mad. They don't protect the ball at all. The Knicks, you know, in the tops in the league during the regular season in turnovers, mainly because they wanted to see their coaching staff do sprints because anytime they had under 13 turnovers, the coaches had to sprint the amount of turnovers the Knicks did. If the players went over 13, they had to do it. So, you know, Woodson kept them loose. I think that's what he has to do here, down 3-1, back at the Garden tonight. But I really believe all they need to do is start hitting shots because the Pacers, as you said, aren't hitting theirs, and they're turning it over more than the Knicks are.
You know what the really other thing, too, Chris, is in sports? You know, you hear about this a lot in the NFL. Oh, you got to build a team.
Fired
like
up, baby.
Right? You listen, you know, you always hear, oh, you got to build a team like this to win. Oh, you got to build a team like this to win. You know, there are many different ways to win. But the key is how you execute it and how you maximize the talent on your roster. And you know, obviously, you got to have the talent, right? The Knicks, I would rather see them fire 43-pointers tonight and lose and play their game than take 11 three-pointer attempts like they did in Game 3. You know the Knicks didn't take under 19 three-point attempts all season in any game this year?
Yeah.
And in Game 3 they took 11? I mean, what? Indiana took 33 three-pointers. I mean, really? What were we watching? And you're right. Your friend brought up a great point. If they were playing Miami those nights, they're losing by 40.
Yeah.
The Knicks are losing by 4. They're getting destroyed. I mean, they're getting blown out the door. Indiana kept them around. I mean, I know everybody wants to praise these great Pacers, but I'm sorry.
Think about it.
Not walking
at
through
the
that
end,
door.
In the third quarter, Brian, in the third quarter of Game 4, we're talking to Brian Sanborn here. He's a very close friend of mine from growing up in South River, New Jersey, and he's a huge sports fan, and I just love having fun with him every once in a while, and this is just a great time for me. But we're talking about the Knicks, talking about the Pacers as well. This is also a Pacer team that lost back-to-back games to the Atlanta Hawks in the first round. Let's not forget that. I know they were both in Atlanta, but still lost back-to-back games to the Hawks, Brian. And they're averaging right now 89 points per game against the Knicks through the first four games. They are not an offensive juggernaut by any means. But the defense they're playing right now, I think, as I brought up with Al yesterday, Al Anazone of Newsday, I said, you know, is this a combination of the Knicks just not hitting their shots and the Pacers' great defense? Do you think it's more one or the other, Brian, or do you think it's a steady mix of both?
I think it's a little bit of both. I'd say 60-40 Knicks not hitting their shots. Again, I'm not going to disrespect the Pacers. They are a good team. And listen, they are playing without Danny Granger, one of their best scorers. So let's give the Pacers some credit in that respect. I mean, you know, Paul George and Roy Hibbert, they're matchup issues for the Knicks. And you felt this was going to be a tough series. But, I mean, listen, the tone was set in Game 1 in this series. I mean, you got to get that Game 1. You're coming off that emotional win, you know, against Boston that Friday night. And the Knicks kind of came out flat, and the Pacers took advantage. You know, there's something else I was thinking about this whole eight teams have only come back from 3-1 down. I bet most of those teams down 3-1, Chris, didn't have home court in Game 5. I bet most of the teams that are up 3-1 are the teams, like, for example, Miami last night, who had home court, won it in 5 at home. I'd be curious to see how many teams down 3-1 with home court came back and won down 3-1. It's most of them. I'd be willing to bet you, maybe all of them, for all we know.
Well, like I said, that, you know, down 3-1, 0-5 in franchise history, it really doesn't mean too much because they're different Knick teams. It's not this year's Knick team. And I want to go back to a point that you just brought up about the Knicks not going away from their game. You know, I'm guilty. You know, when J.R. Smith wasn't hitting his shots, I thought he was being a detriment to the team. He's got to be on the floor. What are you going to do? He's the reason, he's one of the reasons you got there. And I know people say when your second option is J.R. Smith, you're in trouble in the postseason. It's coming through now. But if Carmelo and J.R. Smith can get back to what they were doing when they won 19 of their last 22 games in the regular season, You know, they weren't beating slouches for teams.
No.
They were mowing through the competition down the stretch. If they could find any bit of the touch they had, and Carmelo was shooting nearly 60% every one of those games. I think it's, and I know he's being guarded tenaciously by this Indiana Pacers D. I know what's going on. He's getting bumps. He's getting bruised. He's getting elbowed. He's getting held. No fouls are getting called.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I just don't see them losing Game 5. I don't know if they can get it to a Game 7. They haven't won in Indiana yet. I know that doesn't mean anything either. I think if they get some traction in Game 5 and get some confidence and really blow this team out, like win by 20 like they did in Game 2,
mm-hmm.
you know, going back to Indiana, that'll work wonders. And if they get it back to the Garden for a Game 7 on Monday, oof, watch out.
They're not losing that game if they do that. But I'll be as frank as possible. I think the odds are very slim that the Knicks do win this series. I mean, maybe 5%, 10%. I mean, yeah. But, you know, the odds go up great if you just win tonight. You just got to win tonight. You can't worry about Game 6 and really go from there. I mean, it's very simple. You know, the other thing about, J.R. Smith is your second option, I don't think this was the vision of the Knicks when you have Amari Stoudemire on your roster. Now, he's been hurt. That's another issue, too. I mean, is Amari affecting the rotations right now? I don't really think so. I mean, I know there's a lot of chatter about, the Knicks are about 500 with Amari in the lineup this year. Where I'm concerned about Amari is he's a little slow on defense right now because he's not the game speed, you know, especially in the playoffs, you know.
Right.
The playoffs are a whole different animal. I mean, he picked up, his third, fourth foul, like, basically before they announced his name coming on the floor. It was just, welcome in Amari Starr. Okay, that's his fourth foul on Amari. it was just unbelievable that – and, again, I think that's just from game speed. And I really like Amari. He really wants to win here. He really cares about this organization. But if they can just get anything out of him, even offensively, just for little spurts, that would be really helpful.
All right. Well, the Garden, it won't be completely dark for the rest of the summer, or till June for that matter, we hope. Well, not you, because you could care less about the Rangers. But
well,
the Knicks might be done tonight, but the Rangers carry on. They start their seven-game series in the second round, the Eastern Conference semis against the Boston Bruins. Brian, it's the 10th meeting between these teams in the postseason, but the first since 1973, spanning our lifetime. This is the first time they've met since we were born.
That's our year of birth. Basically, our mothers were pregnant with us when they first met in the playoffs.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. My mom was a little further along. I was in August, and you were in December. The Bruins have a 6-3 edge in those postseason meetings. But you know what, mm-hmm. Brian? I was all over this team. I admit it. But eating crow never tasted so good. I like it well done, and I've been feasting on it ever since they came back and beat the Caps. When they went down 0-2,
mm-hmm.
I went on an off-the-wall rampage, and Joe Auriemma just let me vent. And basically what I said, the two things that are worth anything on this team, and boy, was I wrong, and I had to eat those words too, were Henrik Lundqvist, which I was right about, and mm-hmm. Rick Nash, who's played well. I mean, he's all over the ice. He just hasn't scored. I can't get on him for not scoring. I mean, that's his job. But Lundqvist, Brian, and we'll get to the guys that at the trade deadline that they got from the Blue Jackets. They've mm-hmm. been unbelievable. But Lundqvist, 62 saves in the last two shutout wins against the Caps in 6 and 7. Tuukka Rask on the other end for the Boston Bruins. You know what? Sitting here right now, and I know you're going to give me a prediction in a little bit, but I don't see this series not going seven. I just don't see any scenario which it doesn't go seven, and I would say 90% of the games in this series are going to be one-goal games. Your thoughts?
I agree. First of all, no self-respecting Sabre fan ever roots for the Boston, and I'll steal this from my good friend Derek, the Ruins in the playoffs. Right? I just can't. I am quote unquote rooting for the Rangers. I use that very loosely. I'm not a big Ranger fan, but you know, I'll pull for the. I can't root for Boston. First of all, we'll get that out of the way. You're right. I mean, the Rangers are just the kind of team, Chris, I think you're just going to see some lackluster nights out of. And the reason is because Tortorella's system is a very grinding system. You know, it's not for the faint of heart. You know, it's not a, you know, it's very, a lot of shot blocking, a lot of intense defense. And, you know, he's a tough guy to deal with, as you know. I mean, you've seen his press conferences, which sometimes last, what, 3 seconds? So,
yeah.
And, you know, first of all, just to backtrack, I don't want to hear anything about the Capitals anymore, okay? Go back to your bed. I'm tired of your the Capitals are great. Go away until you show me something. That's enough, all right? They keep doing this every year. They get up 3-2, and I predicted the Rangers actually would still win that series when they were down 3-2 because I don't trust the Capitals, and I never will. But I think you're right.
After what happened, yeah.
I really think tonight is a big game for the Rangers. Now, will it mean the series? I don't think so, but I really think establishing some confidence tonight. I mean, the Rangers have won in Boston a couple times this year, which should help. I mean, I know it's regular season, but at least they know. The real biggest key in this whole series, Chris, is Tuukka Rask going to rise to the occasion?
Right.
I expect Lundqvist to be there. He'll have his games where he's, you know, he'll have some big games. He's got to steal one or two. I really think, I'm not sure about Tuukka Rask. I know he's, you know, he won this playoff series against Toronto. It was a miracle. Let's be fair. I mean, that was beyond the miracle. That was just an epic meltdown of proportions for Toronto. So, but I'm not really sure if I have confidence in Rask. Now, I think skater for skater, I think Boston is a better team than the Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
But the Bruins do have a couple issues. Dennis Seidenberg has not been on the ice.
Seidenberg's been out. Redden and Andrew Ferenc all did not practice today.
And you know as well as I do, chemistry on. They always talk about chemistry with the forwards. Chemistry with the defense, I think, is more important.
Yeah.
And when you're down 2-3 defensemen, that is a really difficult task. Faresque. See, that rhymed. That was pretty good. So I'm going to give you a slight prediction. As Steve Summers would say, Rangers in 7.
All right. I can't argue either way. I couldn't argue if someone said Rangers in 7, Bruins in 7. I can't,
yeah.
Because I just think these teams are so close, and they've played close the entire regular season. Two of the Rangers' wins against the Bruins were overtime or shootout wins. So it's going to be nip and tuck. It's going to be back and forth. I'll tell you right now, I don't care what kind of a good guy Wade Redden is off the ice. And if he is, God bless him. You know, I put Sam Rosen and Joe Micheletti want to pump him up, and he accepted his assignment to Hartford, and now he's with the Bruins. I will give him a secret elixir to make him healthy and put him on the ice. If he's on the ice as a defenseman for the Bruins, I guarantee Rangers victory. Maybe even a sweep. Get that clown on the ice because...
Oh, you mean you didn't like the signing when they got Wade Redden back, what, 6, 7 years ago?
God. Oh, I just have these visions of him getting beat in the playoffs on a game-winning goal. It just repeats in my head over and over and over and mm-hmm. over and over again.
Yep.
Ugh, it was just awful.
Tommy, I mean, Heels, another big factor in this series is going to be face-offs. Boston is the best faceoff team in the NHL, hands down. There's no question. Patrice Bergeron is probably the best at it, period. Rangers got to keep that relatively close because, you know, especially, and, you know, that's going to be a big factor in the power play. Special teams, as always, are a big issue. So
mm-hmm.
I think if the Rangers keep that about 55, 45, 54, you know, they don't want to get in the 60s like Toronto did. I mean, they were abysmal on the faceoffs, and I think that's why Boston came back.
Well, you know, I mentioned Rick Nash not scoring in the first round. Neither did Brad Marchand. So the two top scorers on these teams were shut out in the first round of the playoffs.
Yep, and also Tyler Seguin on Boston had no points against Toronto in 7 games, but he had a lot of shots.
Yeah.
So
I don't see that continuing in the second round. So
yep.
I'm pretty sure that they're going to get on the scoreboard, whether it be, you know, on the point board, an assist or a goal. But a big Rangers plus, Brian, I think, you know, last year they were a one-trick pony. They had one line. You know,
mm-hmm.
that was the only thing. And you saw the Devils in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, their third and fourth line, they were scoring the goals. And you were scratching your head as a Ranger fan saying, really? this is how we're going to go down to this team. But the past couple of games against the Capitals, you know, the third and fourth lines played extremely well. And I'm talking about, you know, Dorsett. I'm talking about Brassard. I know he's on the first line with Nash.
Mm-hmm.
And also John Moore, the defenseman. These three guys they've got from the Blue Jackets, my goodness. I mean, I don't know what they were doing in Columbus, but they have really come over here. And as Tortorella told Mike Francesa a couple days ago, he said it's taken us a little while, you know, since the trade deadline to get everybody on the same page, to get everybody playing together. Dorsett just started playing in the playoffs. He had a broken collarbone. He's starting to get his legs under him. He's fresh. He hasn't played, you know, since he broke his collarbone earlier in the year. So, Brian, I just really think that could be the X factor. If their third and fourth lines, and I don't, you know, Brassard I know is with Nash, but the third and fourth lines, like a Pyatt, like an Asham, like a Dorsett, these guys, I think they're going to be the X factor, along with Lundqvist, you know, being a and all the block shots that the Rangers had in that Capitals game seven. I mean, they whitewashed them. And as you said, enough, Capitals. Seriously.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
After the game, you're going to complain about the officiating? You didn't score. You didn't do anything. It was unbelievable to me.
You don't complain after games.
That the Rangers are advancing because the league wanted them to.
No, because I think the NHL loves the Capitals too with all their Alexander Ovechkin. Although I mean, there is the NBC 6 though. I don't know if I've told you my theory yet. Every game that NBC shows on Sunday afternoons has to be Rangers, Bruins, Flyers, Penguins, Red Wings, or Blackhawks. You could put any kind of combination you want. They will be involved.
Sabres
more...
Flyers game.
Flyers. There you go.
All right.
NBC 6. So anyway, or the NBC 6. No, but I had to get that in. Just to put a bow on it, you know, listen, Lundqvist has to be amazing. They have to block their shots. They have to at least, you know, the special teams battle. If they do those things, I think the Rangers are going to win. If they don't, I mean, Boston's capable of winning the whole thing. Right? They're that good of a team. So it's more of a gut feeling. But like you said, would I be surprised if the Bruins won? Oh, absolutely not. So,
yeah.
But I think tonight is very big for the Rangers.
You know what? The other night, Tuesday, the first game between the Yankees and the Mariners, everybody waxed poetic about the pitching matchup, CeCe against Felix, the two aces. You know, you get that once every 5 days if you're lucky. In this Rangers series, you get Tuukka Rask versus Henrik Lundqvist, seven straight games.
Yeah.
I mean, these are two of the best in the business for seven straight, and you hope it's seven straight.
And, you know, Chris, you working for the Yankees, you know how intense it is for Yankees-Red Sox. Now you just add another, you know, and then, of course, you had the Giants-Patriots.
Giants-Pats, and now you have Rangers.
Now you have Rangers-Boston sort of rekindling the fire a little bit. And so it's amazing that they haven't met in the playoffs in 40 years. That's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's unbelievable. Our entire lifetime.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So it should be fun.
Yeah, moving on to the Yankees, that was a nice transition on my part, I thought. You know, this is the thing that Phil Hughes is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And last night, I broke this down. His four starts from April 18th to May 4th. And if you heard a buzz back there, the dryer just went off. I'm home today for the podcast. Didn't have to go into work. So I got to fold clothes when I'm done with this. But anyway, you didn't need to know that. Four starts from April 18th to May 4th. The D-backs, the Rays, the Jays, and the A's. You ready for this?
Sure.
28 innings, averaging, obviously, seven innings a game. Just six earned runs, an ERA 1.93, a batting average against of 2.25, just two homers allowed. And his last start in that four-start stretch was eight shutout innings against the Oakland A's, nine Ks, two walks. At the time, the A's were the most prolific run-scoring team in the majors. Okay? Now, his last two starts, just a total of 6 1/3, 13 earned. That's an ERA just under 18.5. A batting average against of 4.19. He allowed three homers, didn't make it out of the first against Seattle last night, and served up that salami to Ibanez. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what drives Yankee fans up a wall. Will the real Phil Hughes please stand up? Brian, what is going on with this guy? Is this, you know, everybody was calling him Baby Rocket when he was coming up through the system. Listen, he's not Clemens. He's nowhere near Clemens. He's lucky if he's a 4 or 5 starter. He's not even a top-of-the-rotation guy. If he keeps this up, he can't do it. And I really think you get those fastballs up in the zone against teams who could just bash and mash, or veterans like Ibanez who know what you bring to the table. It's just flat-out gas, no movement, 4 seams. They're going to destroy it, especially if it's up in the zone, and that's what you've seen the past 2 starts.
I agree. And listen, the thing about Phil Hughes, even in his best 2 years, okay, which was 2010 and 2012, you know, he went 18-8 and 16-13. His ERA and WHIP are very similar, 4.19, 1.25, 4.23, 1.26. That's about who he is, in my opinion, which isn't bad. Which is not, you know, especially in American League, in the state. But in those 2 years, Chris, he gave up a total of 60 home runs. I mean, that's unbelievable. That's his problem. I mean, he just has to find a way to decrease the amount of home runs he gives up. Because, that, like you said, you know, he could go going for a while, and then all of a sudden a couple guys get on base because he gives up a decent amount of hits, and he gives up the gopher ball, and then he throws 5 innings and 3 earned runs and 4 runs, and you're like, Phil Hughes had an okay start. Well, you know, he was pretty good for most of the game, and then he just has that one bad inning. So do you think the Yankees have kind of messed with him too much over the years? Bullpen, starting bullpen. Do you think that
I don't know. I think that may have a little something to do with it. But it was only the bullpen in 2009.
That's true.
And he was extremely effective out of the bullpen in 2009. He's one of the reasons that the Yankees were able to win that World Series, because he was pretty much unhittable. And I think, if I remember correctly, he was hitting 97. He was topping out at 97 out of the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
He knew he just had to come in there and gas it. And if he could do that for an inning and not have to worry about, you know, starting, I think that was one of the reasons he was extremely effective, because I think mentally he knew he could just let it go and say, here, if you could hit 97, so be it, hit it. And in that case, you can't really blame him. But I just think, you know, teams watch video. The video doesn't lie. And he leaves a lot of his fastballs up in the zone. He doesn't live by the knees. He lives by the waist. And when you have teams that could hit, I was shocked that the A's, you know, weren't able to do anything against him. And he got away with a couple up in the zone that were popped up, or guys just missed. You know, they foul him back. You know, people say it all the time, well, he just missed that one. Well, they were right. And if they strike out on the next pitch because they were a little behind or a little in front or whatever, you know, they could have just missed a home run on the previous pitch. But I don't know. He has to figure himself out, and he has to start pitching down in the zone, and he has to work on a two-seamer because he needs to start getting some movement on his fastballs. Now, something yesterday, Brian. I just want to keep this rolling because we have 2 minutes left in the live portion, and I want to get to this Yankee stuff, just get your thoughts on it. Overbay, I read that, you know, someone wrote yesterday that Overbay might be the odd man out when Mark Teixeira comes back. I don't know how you can let this guy go with what he's done. I know he only plays first. I know that's the knock against him. But, you know, I just think he'd be invaluable on the bench, you know, a veteran lefty that has gap-to-gap power and also some sneaky home run power as well.
Especially at Yankee Stadium, which has a short right field porch, you know, if you need to.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and let's be honest, too. I mean, Teixeira's coming back from a strained right wrist, okay? He's a lefty hitter, right? So you never know what's going to happen when he really gets back. Is he going to re-aggravate it, you know, or things going to happen? You have to kind of keep an eye on it. I mean, what's the rush? You might as well – or maybe you could trade him. I mean, maybe someone would consider him. But at this point, I would keep him on the roster.
Yeah, I don't see how you can get rid of him. How about this guy Mariano? More saves than the Angels, Mets, Astros, and Marlins have wins. The Angels have 15, Mets 14, Astros and Marlins 11, and Mo has 16 saves. I mean, he's 43 years old. He's perfect 16 for 16, and he's coming off a torn ACL. What else can you say about this guy? There's 42 seconds, by the way, left in the podcast.
You run out of adjectives to describe how great he is. You know, I wonder if he would come back another year. So I wouldn't rule that out. If he keeps pitching like this, I wouldn't.
Well, somebody asked him that the other night, and he said absolutely not. So he's pretty much dead set on it. And listen, we have 20 seconds left in the live portion. Brian and I are going to keep going. So if you want, you could pick it up where you left off here on YesNetwork.com later. But we are coming to the close here on Blog Talk Radio. This 30-minute stuff, it goes too fast with the live stuff. But Brian and I will be back on the other side with more on the Yankees and the Bills. All right, Brian, we continue now with the Yankees and the bullpen, which has been unbelievable. And this kid, Preston Claiborne, that they called up, 7 innings so far, just 5 hits, 4 strikeouts, no walks. He pitched 2 1/3 yesterday, scoreless innings. He's been very – I don't – see, talk about Overbay leaving this team. I don't see how – you know, when Jabba Chamberlain gets healthy – I don't see how you could let Claiborne go. He's just been,
yep.
I don't
it's
know
funny.
Who's going to be the odd man out there in the bullpen. Maybe Adam Warren, but he's done a solid job too. But Claiborne has pitched extremely well, Brian. And great story. His father passed away. But his whole, I don't know if you know the backstory. His father passed away. They're from Texas. The first game Preston went to as a kid was a Rangers-Yankees game in Arlington, and his father taught him from the very beginning, I want you to handle yourself the way the Yankees handle themselves, with class, dignity, and respect. And, you know, he died his sophomore year in college, and he never got to see his son, get to the Yankees system and make his debut. It's just such a great story. And this kid, you know, he does what you want someone to come up here and do. Use your best stuff, challenge these hitters, and throw strikes. And that's what he's doing. And I think that's why, Brian, he's had success. He's throwing, you know, he's topping out 95, 96. He's got a devastating changeup that tails away from lefties, tails into righties. He's just been extremely effective for Joe Girardi. And in a year when there's been all these injuries, these guys, you know, whether it be seasoned veterans or young kids getting a look, they're all stepping up, Brian, and it's all at the same time. It's amazing. The Yankees are 2 games up on both the Red Sox and the Orioles, and we're at the quarter pole of the season. Tremendous.
Absolutely. Something you and I have talked about is that, you know, you don't need all these free swinging home run guys to win baseball games. And the Yankees
or an all-star at every position, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, that some people may disagree in the Yankee organization. But, yeah, anyway. Well, I mean, it's funny. Preston Claiborne, I was reading here, was nicknamed Jabba Jr., which was kind of pretty interesting.
Well, he's got this – well, that's
Montgomery,
too. We've
got that really good changeup.
Montgomery, he's got the change. And Montgomery down in Scranton, he's got the fastball and then the wicked slider. And, you know, you might see him as well out of that Scranton Rail Riders bullpen come up to the Yankees. But you just can't say enough about what this team has had to go through. And I said yesterday on the podcast, after I said goodbye to Al Anizon, he had to go to Knicks practice yesterday, I started talking about the Yankees. And I wasn't afraid to put it out there, Brian. I think this, when all is said and done, regardless as if the Yankees make the postseason, don't make the postseason, whatever, I think this is going to be the best managerial job Joe Girardi has ever done in his life. That goes to the Marlins in 2006 when he won Manager of the Year and his World Series title with the Yankees in 2009. I think this year is going to be the best year for Joe Girardi.
You know, he is a good manager. Now, you know, any manager, especially nitpicked, right? I mean, they're going to – you know, sometimes people didn't like the way he handled pitching decisions, you know, taking guys in and out and stuff. Well, Girardi kind of fits what the Yankees are trying to do. I mean, he just has that quintessential Yankee manager. I really don't have any issues with him. The players seem to respect him, seems to keep a fairly level head. So I agree. I think this is definitely one of his best jobs so far. It's a long season. Now, I'm not saying the Yankees are going to fall off, but we've seen before where teams I don't think the Yankees are going to have that precipitous fall, but I just guard myself and say, let's see a little bit more just to be on the safe side.
Yeah, but you always wonder if the other shoe is going to drop, but for right now, as a Yankee fan, you have to enjoy what this team is doing. Now, before we sign this one off, we have 11 minutes left before Blog Talk hangs up on us, like it did last time. But I want to get this stuff in with the Buffalo Bills, your favorite team, and the team in New York that everybody forgets is in New York, actually the only one in New York State.
You know what? Here's my thought on this. Every Giant Jet fan I talk to, this is how I say, oh, well, the Bills are the only team in New York. They say, no, they're not. I said, well, if taxpayers need to raise money for your team's stadium, what state is paying for it? New Jersey. Okay, end of story. Buffalo's the only team in Buffalo, New York.
That's a fair point.
Yep. Chris Christie fit the bill.
now what I'm going to say is not news to basically one of my best friends from home. He's liked this team, since we were in grammar school. He was running around with Bill's shirt on. All right, so Jim Kelly retired in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I prepared these lists of quarterbacks since 1997 on other teams. But we're going to do the Bills first. Just
can
let me get
some,
through
can
it.
I take some Advil before I do this?
Let me get through it, and then we'll let you respond. But here's the Bills from 1997 on. Here we go.
Okay.
Todd Collins, Alex Van Pelt, Doug Flutie, Rob Johnson, Drew Bledsoe, J.P. Losman, Kelly Holcomb, Trent Edwards, Brian Brohm, and Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's 10. Since Jim Kelly retired, and they're still trying to find his replacement, and now you got corn on the cob. But since Jim Kelly retired, 10 quarterbacks have been through Orchard Park. Okay? Now let's look at some other teams since 1997. We'll do the Falcons first. Chris Chandler, Michael Vick, Joey Harrington, Matt Ryan. 4.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do the Steelers. Cordell Stewart, Kent Graham, Tommy Maddox, Mike Tomczak, Ben Roethlisberger. So there were 4 before Big Ben, 3 before Matt Ryan. The New York Giants, Danny Cannell, there he is, Captain Kent Graham again.
Oh boy.
Terry Collins, Jesse Palmer, Kurt Warner, Eli Manning. So there's 5 before Eli.
Mm-hmm.
The Green Bay Packers, Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers.
Unbelievable.
And I know you don't want to hear this, but the New England Patriots, Drew Bledsoe and Tom Brady. Matt Cassel was in there, but that was when Brady was injured. I didn't include him in that because he didn't really take over. But you see my point. You see the point I'm trying to make here. There's a reason why the Buffalo Bills haven't been to a playoff game. And, you know, I'll admit it. I will freely admit this, Brian. I had no idea. I knew it was 13 seasons, but I didn't know their last appearance was in the Music City Miracle.
Yes,
in the wild card game when they lost to the Titans on that kick with the pass, the forward pass, by the way.
The day that I left Simcoe's and drove to Point Pleasant to clear my head. That is a true story, by the way.
1999, Doug Flutie was the quarterback. That was the Buffalo Bills' last playoff game. 1999, the year Prince sang about in the late 80s.
Chris, I'm going to be 40 in December. I'm going through my whole 30s without seeing a Bills playoff game. Just put that in perspective.
That's unbelievable. All right. But there's light at the end of the tunnel here. They promoted Doug Whaley to GM. He played... Mm-hmm. He played his college football at Pitt. He was a safety and a linebacker.
Yep.
He started scouting with the Steelers. He accepted the job with the Bills after 10 years with the Steelers. He was involved with a lot of the big names on the Steelers' defense. He was the director of pro player personnel over there for Pittsburgh. How do you feel about this move, and what do you think this means for the Bills moving forward, Brian? You have the floor.
Okay, well, listen, I mean, obviously you have to give a guy some time, right? Now, Doug Whaley has an excellent track record working with the Steelers, who are an organization that I've always felt the Bills should model after. Where do they play, Chris? Buffalo, okay? This isn't Miami. This isn't Los Angeles. Guys, like, the only reason why Terrell Owens went there is because he had no options, okay? He's not going to Buffalo if he has options. He talks about blue collar. He talks about hard hitting. He talks about aggressive players on defense. Doug Whaley's 41 years old, and he's one of the few minority GMs in the business, which I think is – image is everything, Chris, okay? The Bills used to have a 92-year-old owner They brought back Marv Levy, who was 80-something years old as a GM at one time. Buddy Nix, who I think is a good man and a good football mind, was 73. I think the Bills were looked at as this outdated franchise that had an old stadium that had nothing going on. Now you have Russ Brandon, who's a CEO, who's probably in his late 40s, early 50s. You have Doug Marrone, who's the new coach from Syracuse, who comes with this attacking style from New Orleans. And now you have Doug Whaley, who's an up-and-coming GM, 41 years old, coming from the Pittsburgh organization. Image is everything, Chris. And listen, a little memo to the Jets. The Giants didn't earn their reputation overnight, right? We've talked about this 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
The Bills have to start from the ground floor up. And I think Thurman Thomas had a quote right around January 1st that it's on like a mofo. And we always make fun of him for it. But think about what they've done since January 1st. I mean, Ralph Wilson's out of the picture. New coach, new GM. I like what Doug Whaley has to say. I like what he talks about, what kind of players he's looking for. And, you know, he's going to focus mostly on the roster and on the draft. And, Chris, you and I both know, especially for teams like Buffalo, the draft is everything. I mean, go look at Pittsburgh. When was the last time Pittsburgh signed a big free agent?
Yeah.
I mean, now the Bills got Marion Williams last year, so that's a step in the right direction for them to change their image that they can't bring in players.
And how competitive have the Steelers and Giants been? See, that was my point with naming all these quarterbacks. A, it was to have a little fun with you, but at the same time, you know, the Steelers, the Falcons, the Packers, the Giants, the Patriots, these are teams that have had great success over recent years, and it's because of one common denominator, a quarterback, and it's something the Buffalo Bills desperately need to find.
Well, I'll tell you what. Just looking at their draft this year, and you know, Whaley's handprints are all over it. E.J. Manuel, what are the best things everybody talks about E.J. Manuel? Leader, vocal, great guy, tough. Robert Woods, who they drafted from USC, leader, tough. Kiko Alonso, who they drafted as a linebacker from Oregon, a freak, tough, leader, you know, aggressive. You know, I like just what I'm hearing. These are the Bills seem to have a plan, and it just takes time. You know, you just can't strike lightning in a bottle and go after New England. It's not going to happen.
Right, right.
So I like the vision that they have. I like the type of ball players they're bringing in. But again, you know, everything starts with ownership. I always tell you about the big four: ownership, general manager, quarterback, and coach. If you don't have at least two or three, you ain't winning in the NFL. New England has all four. The Giants have all four. That's why they're always consistently in the mix.
You couldn't have said it any better. And let's
San Diego's
the last. Go ahead.
The San Diego's a perfect example. Great quarterback. What else do they got? Bad coach.
Yeah.
Bad owner. That's why the Chargers are up and down. That's why they're not consistent. So you got to have, and I hope the Bills are getting this in order, to have a good front office, and I'm hoping E.J. Manuel's the right guy.
Well, we'll see. And Kevin Cobb is there too, right?
Yeah, and I think it's going to be an open competition. I don't believe this stuff that they say that E.J. Manuel's a project quarterback. His numbers
really
were better than Josh Freeman across the board in college.
Yeah,
okay?
I really hope he's the opening day starting quarterback. I'd like to see
get a chance and watch his interviews.
I saw him with John Gruden on ESPN. It was great. His quarterback.
I'm impressed.
He was great. There's
something about him that says, you know what, Chris, I don't care if he's not the next Tom Brady. Just give me the next Joe Flacco, okay? I'll be happy with that.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't need to have there's so many few great quarterbacks. Put them in the Manning Flacco class. I'll be thrilled.
Yeah.
And that's really people got to get it straight. Oh, he's not going to be a great a franchise quarterback. Who says he has to be a franchise quarterback?
Just get the team back to the playoffs. End this 13-year drought for my best friend. Get them back. It's been long enough. The Baker's dozen has come, and let it go. E.J. Manuel, it's on your shoulders now to stop. You know what? Let's get my friend Brian Sanborn at Sambone73 a little Field of Dreams elixir. Let's ease his pain, E.J. Manuel. Let's ease his pain.
So am I going to have James Earl Jones show up at my door?
You are Terrence Mann, Brian Sanders.
Yes, Terrence Mann.
That's who you are.
We're going to go see Moonlight Graham tomorrow.
Huh?
We're going to go see Moonlight Graham.
Yeah, hopefully Doug Whaley and E.J. Manuel will help ease your pain. Ryan, that's all the time we have. I don't want them to cut us off before we could properly send this off here, so we're going to send it off ourselves. In the words of A Tribe Called Quest, the Off the Wall podcast, The word maraud means to loop. In this case, we maraud for ears. I hope you enjoyed it because Brian and I enjoyed it too.
I do. Thank you very much.
Tomorrow. Yeah, well, no problem, Brian. And we will see you back here tomorrow with more Off the Wall on BlogTalkRadio and YesNetwork.com. Adios!